Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. A week ago, I interviewed John Hathaway for Mike Maloney's Gold Silver YouTube channel. John is a legend in the hard assets investment world, and he shared a number of valuable predictions about where he sees the precious metals, gold and silver, headed from here. So with Mike's kind permission, I'm now sharing the interview here with you on Wealthion. Enjoy. After holding their own in 2022, a horrible year for stocks and bonds, the precious metals and the companies that mine them are positioned very well to deliver superior results here in 2023. To learn why, we're extremely fortunate to be joined today by John Hathaway, Sprott Managing Director and one of the most respected precious metals portfolio managers in the industry. John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, John, look, been looking forward to this interview with you for a long time. Thank you so much for coming on the program. We're going to dive deeply into your area of expertise, precious metals. Before we do, I just want to kick things off with my customary high-level question I like to ask all my guests at the beginning of these interviews. What's your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
Well, I would say that it's very different than consensus. Which I think, let me just give you an idea of what I think the consensus view is. And that is that the US is heading into a shallow recession that will not be very long lived. And, but that the Fed, which has been the main problem for most investors for the last really half year at least, will pivot somewhere along the way. And then everything will go back to normal and onward and upward. My view is that the recession is just starting and it will be steeper and longer than the consensus thinks and may even last more than a year. Maybe it may last a couple years, that we are in a bear market. We may have rallies along the way, you always do. But I think it will turn out to be very troublesome. And I would say that somewhere along the line here, I expect the Fed to cry uncle because the economy is doing so badly and the pressures are so great from a political point of view that they will turn on the fire hose again and revert to the zero interest rate QE playbook that got us into trouble in the first place.
All right. In previous discussions with past experts on this program, a similar topic has come up, which is it's almost sort of like be careful what you wish for with a Fed pivot. As you said, consensus was sort of short and shallow recession, the Fed pivots, and then we just go back to normal, right? We go back to the salad days of pre-2022.
Exactly.
It sounds like from what you're saying is that not only will the recession be more painful, you know, steeper and longer, but that if we get to a point where the Fed is forced to pivot, it may likely be by really systemic, you know, bad systemic breakages that aren't necessarily bullish moments for markets. I mean, it could be real trauma that's going on. And so the Fed pivot might not be accompanied by an immediate zoom higher in stocks. And secondly, we may be dealing with the reverberations of the shockwaves from whatever forced the Fed to pivot, you know, for a good while. And I know in past, hiking phases with the Fed, when the Fed has pivoted, it's generally taken the markets several quarters to recover. It wasn't like this instantaneous switch. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of already have history or historical precedent on our side for that view as well. Did I summarize your viewpoint there well?
Yeah, no, I think, I guess I don't know what the market would do. I would assume it would rally. I'm not sure from what level, but certainly the Fed pivot, when it comes, will be a relief because of the general feeling that What they've done is damaging, and it may not cure inflation. Frankly, I don't think it will. I do believe that inflation is moderating. If you go to the print of last June on the CPI, which I think was 9.1% or so, and you just do it sequentially instead of year over year, you're basically flat. Inflation is maybe 2%, maybe not even that. So, but that doesn't mean that inflation has been cured, because there are many things that may not be responsive to a slowdown in the economy. I think labor is one of the things. Mm-hmm. Very sticky wages, I believe, and they're a big component. Housing, rents coming down for sure, but a lot of these things are very slow moving and may take more than a 6-month campaign of hawkishness to wring out of the system. So my point of view would be that inflation is moderating. There may be a fig leaf in some of the numbers that will allow the Fed to pull in its horns a little bit. But I do think that inflation, and you can just look at the Fed balance sheet, which is still, what is it, 8 trillion?
Yeah.
8 trillion plus. I mean, how are they going to unwind that? I mean, it's there. I just don't see them doing it. And one thing that to me is important to talk about is that I don't think the Fed can afford a recession, because in a recession, tax receipts go down. Spending probably goes up because of the reflex that you get out of politicians to help out in the form of more spending. And so that means that a budget deficit of, I don't even know what the number is, but it's probably, what, $1.5 trillion, which is the current run rate. It could go to twice that.
Right.
And what's that going to do to the dollar? And what, so I just think that we're in a position where I just don't, I think the best way to put it is regime change and you know, whatever that means, but it's not a back to normal scenario.
Got it. Okay. And that's sort of where I was going. It's not a back to normal scenario. And it's interesting. You just said you don't think the Fed can afford a recession. I'm curious, John, despite that, is a recession even avoidable at this point in time? Right.
I mean, we're in a recession. I mean, you look at retail sales were down like 1%. Look at the Empire Index. I mean, those numbers are just terrible. I just think we're just early days here. Again, if the Fed does what it's claiming it will, it'll hike some more, and it's going to stay there. It's not talking about retracting any of this hawkish stance that they're committed to. And if that's correct, I think the recession that I think is, to me, is very easy to see. It's beyond me how people still say, I mean, consensus is there's a recession, but the consensus is also that it's short and shallow and soft landing. But some of these things don't look like a soft landing to me. A 1% decline in retail sales doesn't sound like a soft landing to me. You look at the layoffs, I mean, there's so many things to talk about. And this is the sort of thing, Larry Summers gave an interview the other day, and he called it that we could be in a Wile E. Coyote moment. Hmm. And you remember where Wile E. Coyote was chasing Roadrunner, and all of a sudden he's in the middle of space, and he's the next thing is a face plant, you know, somewhere down in the canyon. I kind of think that's where we are. The damage has been done. And the thought that they're just going to hang tough, the Fed being the Fed, and just stand pat while they watch inflation numbers trickle down, is to me, it's not credible. And I think what where we're going to see is a, is an unforecast, a quicker than expected reversal, and maybe, you know, turning on the fire hoses all over it.
Okay, and we're here to talk about precious metals, but this was really important context to set. So I hear you saying, John, is look, the short-term prescription you have is pain, right? Going into recession, you mentioned that we're still in a bear market. I've seen some recent quotes from you saying that you believe the bear market's far from over. You know, things are going to get more painful, both in the economy and in the financial markets. Right. You think that then's going to force the Fed to pivot, maybe even to go back down close to ZERP. I don't know if you're calling for exactly ZERP, but you know, a pretty dramatic rate cuts from where we are right now. Yes. And of course, all of that is going to have an impact on precious metals. So let's talk about now, if that indeed happens as you think it's going to, how do you think the precious metals are going to respond to all that?
I think positively, obviously. And, you know, just why, you know, the headlines in 6 months, you know, we're just speculating. But the price behavior of gold, we bottomed around 1600. Here we are at 1900 and change in the space of a couple of months.
Yeah.
Nobody's paying any attention. Sentiment is terrible, continues to be bad. I can look at the flows that we see into our mutual fund and say that they're at best subdued. And, you know, I'm very in touch with sentiment indicators, and I look at a lot of the commentary in the financial media. And I would just say, notwithstanding this rally that we've had, there is absolutely no interest, no excitement. And so, long-winded answer to your question is, I don't really know, and nobody can know, what the headlines will be 6 months from now. But if you look at the price behavior of gold and also the gold mining stocks, but really gold is the key thing to look at, it's telling a story. That, you know, is it saying that inflation is we're going to have a resurgence of inflation when the Fed relents? Is it saying that there are black swans out there, maybe in the shadow banking system, which is bigger than the regulated banking system? Is it, you know, on the geopolitical front? We don't know. But price makes news, headlines follow. And I can think of enough black swans that are out there that will affect interest, which, to restate my point, is zero right now. And here we are within striking distance of an all-time high on the gold price. Nobody cares.
So, John, I want to get to those black swans in just a second. But first off, just why is sentiment so lackluster in gold right now? It kind of boggles my mind because it was one of the best performing assets of 2022, right? When the S&P was down 20% and the NASDAQ was down over 30%. You know, yeah, I think a lot of gold holders expected the conditions in 2022 would have sent gold vaulting higher, but at least it held its own, right? So, you know, why are so many capital allocators apparently still kind of not impressed by it?
A lot of reasons that I can think of for that. I think what has always plagued gold is that somehow to justify it as an addition to a portfolio or a strategy, there's a lot of negativity that goes with it. There's a pessimism in terms of the market or the economic outlook that one would have to subscribe to to justify committing a gold in a peer situation. And I think that's the biggest thing. So the fact that it performs well, and when it does perform well, is kind of quickly brushed under the rug, swept under the rug. And because the story of gold is, it's either inflation, it could be geopolitical unrest, upset, could be economic misfortune. There's so many things that people who talk about gold, and I guess I'd be plead guilty to the same issue. To bring it up, you have to talk about something negative for mainstream investors and why to have it. I think it's healthier to say gold is a hedge against systemic risk, and having some exposure to it without necessarily taking a strong point of view on the bad things that could happen makes sense, just as you would buy insurance on a house, right, or anything like that. So, but to answer your question, when gold does well, maybe the majority of people aren't doing well in their chosen strategies, and so they don't want to hear about it. I'm used to it. I've been doing it for 20 years now, and I've got a thick skin. But I think that's as close as I can come to an answer to your question.
All right, John. Well, look, you recently said that gold and mining shares are severely underowned and will prove, quote, effective antidotes to ongoing macroeconomic chaos. I want to talk about both of those, but maybe I could take the latter one first. So you mentioned that you can think of a number of black swans or shoes to drop from here that could really turbocharge the prospects for the precious metals. Which ones of those do you think are more likely?
I think a recession that lasts more than a few months would be first and foremost because of the knock-on effects of what that would mean. It would be bad for it would be bad for leveraged private equity. It would be bad for the funding gap in pension funds. It would be bad for subprime debt. I think the credit risks that would surface if a recession lasted more than a few months, and they're already surfacing, but if they were ongoing, I think there would be a cascade effect that would be very adverse for the financial markets. Those are just a few that sort of jump off at the top of my head.
Okay, and let's say for a moment that those type of shoes start dropping. Presumably, gold would benefit there from the safety trade, you know, obviously.
For sure.
Yeah, and then if the Fed's response was, okay, we're pivoting and, you know, we're going back towards ZERP, then obviously sort of from a, you know, purchasing power protection standpoint, that should be really favorable for gold too. So as you kind of think about what could happen from here, like how bright a future do you think that, you know, does gold have from here? And what sort of time frame would you be expecting to see gold's next big move to happen over? You know, as you mentioned, it's back up near all-time highs already, even though, you know, it's not really grabbing headlines right now. Do we catapult to brand new highs from here? Do we break out, you know, decisively into the 2000s as this next chapter unfolds?
Well, I think the answer is yes, because nobody's aboard. The things that could happen are the sort of things that would sort of activate the safety trade that you just referenced. A resort to the old playbook of ZERP and QE would mean that all the pain that investors have gone through for the last year has come to nothing, and we're back on the same old rat race of money print. So I think it's a combination of things, the safety trade, a sort of collective, oh, here we go again. And, you know, the people that we thought had everything under control, the master puppet, the puppet masters of, you know, who were sort of engineering the soft landing, really didn't know what they were doing after all. I think that would bring gold into everybody's focus as something to do. And again, I look at price action, price behavior, apart from, you know, we're just here stumbling around trying to guess what the reasons would be. And, you know, maybe some guesses are more educated than others. But to me, the fact that gold has had this big rally, it appears to have made a major bottom without any headlines whatsoever, is extremely positive. And, you know, we're just left to guess as to the reasons why and what will be happening 6 months or a year from now to make more people than do right now want to have a position. We've done some work, some charts that would show that the investment exposure of the conventional investment managers. We have a couple of charts that we could throw in that show how low the investment exposure is. We have another chart, which I'd like to include, that shows what would take if you had a 1% reallocation of investable assets into gold, which would be, I think, very instructive. It's something we have on our website that we've updated.
Great. Well, so, you know, what I was talking to Rick Rule not that long ago, and he said that if you look at the 40-year history of ownership of gold, it was had like a 40-year average allocation in portfolios of like 2%, but today it's more like 0.5%. So, you know, he was forecasting that he could see it in the not too distant future going back to 2%, and that's basically a quadrupling of capital into the gold market. And of course, he thinks that would really pop the price. Your 1% reallocation of investable assets, I'm assuming, is sort of a similar study, right? Which is just, is it saying that if an additional 1% came into the market, this is what we think would happen?
Yeah, there's not enough gold to at current prices to allocate to handle that allocation.
Wow. Okay. So not enough gold, literally not enough physical gold to
correct.
Affect that allocation. So, I mean, so what does that mean? I mean, would I just imagine that the price would have to get forced higher, potentially by some multiple,
a big. It's not just $100 here, $100 there. You're talking, you know, and again, these are the numbers that can come back to bite you, but they are step changes in the valuation of gold versus the dollar, gold versus paper currencies in general.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. This, again, another topic Rick and I had talked about recently, where we're seeing the world understandably accelerate its efforts to de-dollarize. Right. I think you know, America certainly gave a lot of its trading partners reasons to do that in terms of how we've sort of weaponized the financial mm-hmm. system against Russia following the Ukraine war. And I'm not saying whether that was good or bad. It just showed a lot of players out there that, oh, that might happen to me someday in the future. And therefore, I don't want to be overly dependent the way I am now on the dollar. And Rick's projection, which you don't have to share, is, the dollar is probably still going to be the world reserve currency in 20 years. It's just going to have some competition. It's just its market share is not going to be as big. And as you begin to have these different competitors, you know, from different parts of the world emerge from a monetary regime standpoint, these players don't trust one another. And, there's people will be sort of transacting in whichever currencies they trust the most. But there's going to be a lot of skepticism. But the one thing that everybody can agree on is that gold holds monetary value, right? That's why all central banks around the world hold gold, right? So basically, he was thinking this increased competition for world reserve currency is probably going to benefit gold more than any other particular currency, because it's the one thing everybody can have faith in.
That's correct. I mean, people trust it. It's hard to imagine that when you think about the commentary in Western financial markets. But if you look around the rest of the world, and you look at the designs that the Chinese have to have the transactions in RMB. It's happening before our eyes. And the important thing about that, the real thing that hits home in my mind, is that means there is less demand for U.S. treasuries from foreign entities, official and private. It means that the deficits that we are starting to run up are going to get harder and harder to finance. Mm-hmm. The math is daunting. And you could just look and see that the divestment of treasuries by China alone has been substantial in the last couple of years. And instead of flows, so it's kind of like the Zoltan Pozsar, who is a Credit Suisse guru that everybody talks about, and justifiably so, talks about the dusk of the petrodollar. That means the idea of recycling trade surpluses into treasuries had its best days. And what does that mean when the U.S. government deficits are continuing to increase? God forbid we have a recession that lasts more than a couple of months. Mm-hmm. Those deficits are going to be very, very tough to recycle. And it makes me wonder, what is the interest rate that will clear markets in a defective currency, which the dollar is, without in a free market? To me, that's one of the biggest black swans of all, is that if the Fed were not in play to manipulate the bond market, and obviously, we all know that they did that for many, many years following the GFC, where would interest rates go? I mean, our rates could look like Argentina.
Right. And given your concerns about our current level of indebtedness, and that's just looking at the federal debt, right? It's not taking into account all the entitlements and other obligations.
Well, you have to include entitlements, but I mean, that only makes the argument stronger.
Exactly. I've had lots of discussions with viewers of this channel when we've been talking about today's interest rates. And they say, 7%, mortgage rates, interest rates at 5+, like we had way higher back in the 80s, right? But what that they don't take into account is, yes, you did, but the country was at a completely different position back then, balance sheet wise, right?
Right. Yeah, debt to GDP was, I think, 30%, and now it's 100. I think it's 120.
Okay, and obviously, if essentially what you're talking about there, which is kind of like a bond market revolt, right, where the bond vigilantes, who, are a term from a bygone era, but if they actually came back and took the bond market, out of the control of the Fed, and interest rates went up into the high single or double digit, areas, that would be catastrophic for today's economy. Again, though, and I'm not saying that you're saying that that's exactly what's going to happen, but that would be good for gold, right? I mean, from a crisis trade standpoint.
Again, that's right. The safety trade, the safe haven. I mean, one of the narratives that gold was battling for most of last year was that the dollar was a safe haven. And, you follow markets, the trade weighted dollar, DXY, traded at 115. It was almost like religious fervor. It was almost like crypto. People thought that this was the best place in the world to be, and they positioned it, particularly the quants would position that trade by being long dollars and short gold. And the spread, if you look at that trade and the spread, it was fantastic. But it was overcrowded, and gold really, and the dollar was not a safe haven. It was a crowded trade. And gold actually turned out at the end of the day, at the end of the year, let's say, to be the safe haven. It was superior to the dollar, superior to just about everything out there.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the dollar there, John. So the dollar did have a strong year last year. I mean, it cooled off in the last couple of months. But a hot debate right now is whether we're going to see a resurgence in strong dollar in 2023, or if indeed it's going to continue to weaken because it was so strong next year. And, that's important to gold because gold and the dollar tend to trade in this inverse relationship. So I'm curious, A, to know your outlook for the dollar for 2023, if you've got a strong opinion. But secondly, if you could opine just on the fact that people treat this inverse relationship in price between gold and the dollar as ironclad, but it's not necessarily, right? You can have there's some periods of time where the dollar index goes up and gold goes up along with it too, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest BS narratives out there. If the strong dollar was the biggest factor in gold prices, how is it that gold has gone from 300 to 1900 in the last 20 years? I mean, you've had periods along the way when the dollar was strong and periods along the way when the dollar was weak. But at the end of the day, the gold in dollars is up about sevenfold. So to me, that's just kind of the garbage you hear on the financial, CNBC and Bloomberg, to name two. In the short run, yeah, it's a trade. It worked very well. But I'm not sure that, I put it this way. I am absolutely certain that a strong dollar is death for the U.S. economy. It's deflationary. It's bad for emerging markets. It's bad for our trading partners. And so I do not fear a return to that level of the dollar versus the euro or the yen. And where I think we're headed, and this goes back to an earlier piece of our discussion, is that as the world moves towards more of a multipolar reserves system, where you have a lot of trade being done in RMB and maybe other currency blocks. You've seen the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, and so forth, move in that direction. It means less shelf space for the dollar. And again, that is very bad for how do we finance, how do we recycle all this treasury issuance that's going to result from where we are today. And then if there's a recession, almost double what people are predicting. So I just have a hard time seeing dollar strength as a intermediate term expectation. That's my outlook for the dollar.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I want to tread over in just a minute to the precious metals mining companies. You've made a very storied career of, managing funds, managing funds of the miners and creating great returns, especially when those sectors come into favor. Real quick, though, just as a segue there, we talked about sort of the monetary role and prospects for precious metals. Just from a general supply and demand standpoint, are there any notable trends going on there? You know, I hear from people that, you know, especially around silver, that, you know, given commercial demand, expected growth and whatnot, that we've just really underinvested in, you know, CapEx and supply from the mining side, and that shortages at some point are almost inevitable at this point. Don't want to put the words in your mouth, so I'm just curious, you know, is there anything notable on the supply side of gold or silver or the demand side that you, you know, think are setting up this favorable performance in the relatively near future?
Sure. If you look at supply and demand, I'm talking about gold now, just physical, you're more or less in balance. Every year, the world produces, I guess it's around 3,500 metric tons. And then there's some certain amount of recycling that maybe gets you up to, say, 4,000 metric tons on the supply side. And then on the demand side, you have traditionally jewelry being a big factor. You have some minor industrial usage, and then you have basically the leftover is investment demand. And you know, that's kind of one level of the discussion. And as I say, the charts that I will show you will kind of take that into account. But the other dimension that is often overlooked in this kind of supply and demand discussion is paper trading of gold, derivatives, options, algorithmic trading, and this sort of thing. I was astonished when I read that the weekly trading of paper derivatives, and this is an LBMA, London Bullion Metropolitan Association stat, is $300 billion a week. And
wow,
it's and again, I could translate that into physical. I can't do it, you know, right off the top of my head. But it is 100 or 200 times the amount of physical gold that we're talking about, maybe even more than that. So, you know, the question is for me, is price discovery for gold going to come from supply and demand of physical, like we just talked about, mine mm-hmm. supply, recycling versus jewelry, et cetera? Or is it going to be driven by paper gold trade, where there's really no underlying physical gold changing hands in that $300 billion a week? Absolutely none. And frankly, the instruments that are called gold have no real claim to physical gold. It's rehypothecated multiple times over. And it's, I have to admit, it's been a rabbit hole for me for the last 2 decades to figure this out. Because it really, if you want to talk about physical supply and demand, it's a pretty healthy picture. And it's only when you get the quants involved and they get they go off on this this excursion about the strong dollar and long dollar, short gold, that you have a sort of a disconnect between what you think should be supply and demand and what actually takes place in terms of price. I would just, and again, this is something that could make anybody's eyes glaze over, but frankly, you know, a lot of brain damage in the process. But remember that 300 billion a week is basically credit. It's the willingness of one institution to accept the credit of another. You know, when Soros broke the pound, he didn't buy pounds and then sell it short. He just put up his balance sheet and said, you know, I'm selling all the pounds you will give me credit for. And he was right. And I kind of think it's pretty similar to that in the gold market today. And so I think that comes to an end in some kind of credit crunch. And I'm not sure quite how it comes to pass, and that disconnect will be resolved. And investors, again, this is the safety trade, who want to invest in gold will only invest in physical that's unallocated and not capable of being rehypothecated. And I think that's how you get to the kind of numbers that Rick Rule is talking about and others, of multiples of where we are today.
Okay, so maybe just to restate a little bit to make sure I completely get it, the paper volume, the trade of paper gold, if you will, is vastly greater than the trade of actual physical gold. And you said, you know, 200 times or perhaps more, mm-hmm. right? So the paper tail has been wagging the dog here for a long time. You said this has been a rabbit hole you've gone down for 20 years, right? And there's, you know, so to the market, to a certain extent, it looks like there's way more gold out there than there actually is in terms of ounces. And you're saying that has been sort of enabled by, you know, sort of modern finance, where you've got all these quant algorithms and we've got these derivatives and we can rehypothecate, you know, physical gold and all that type of stuff. But that's been sort of enabled at the base of it by kind of cheap and plentiful credit. And you're basically saying there very well may come a credit crisis that kind of knocks out the base of that pyramid of paper trading. Right. And all of a sudden, what really matters is okay, can you get your hand on the physical?
Gotta have.
And yeah. So basically, you've got all the demand that was there that the paper market created, but the only supply left is the real ounces themselves. And so all of a sudden, demand just overwhelms supply, and that's when you get the repricing. Mm-hmm.
That's well stated.
Okay. All right. I mean, there's a lot of people watching this who I say, that day can't come soon enough.
Well, I think when it does come, it will come with a lot of side effects that people don't like.
Right. There'll be a lot of collateral damage, pain.
A lot of collateral damage. But I think that's basically the right idea.
Okay. Yeah. I know there's some people that have been long time precious metal holders like you that have seen the precious metal prices get monkey hammered by some of these inside institutions that like to just push the paper price around.
I've got another thing I can give you, which I took out of Paul Singer's letter, that shows you the advance of options trading since the CBOE was launched. I think it was in the mid 1970s. And there's one stat in there that if it has to do with the amount of trades that would disappear if they had to settle, if they had to be outstanding for more than a couple minutes. It's like 40% of options trading would disappear.
Oh my goodness.
We should include that, and we could credit Elliot. I think he got it from Goldman Sachs. But you know, it's throughout the markets, and the economic interest is the betting. Yeah, it's just there's more economic interest in whether DXY closes at 110 or 111. Because of the bets that have been made on that particular outcome in a 2-week period, than there is on funneling investment flows into the real economy. And so we have this, these paper markets, and gold is certainly has been subsumed by this whole phenomenon of betting on option strikes, and frankly, in manipulating the price for certain outcomes. And you know, this is really inside baseball. There's a lot of granular analysis of how these markets work. And as I say, I've been trying to figure it out for 20 years and I haven't. But my observation is that there's more price discovery in that sort of thing than there is in physical flows, supply and demand that we talked about earlier.
Okay, that's super fascinating. All right, John, well, look, as we begin to wrap up here, I do just want to talk about the mining companies for just a moment here. Presumably, if the metals have an upwards repricing, you know, substantial upward repricing like you think is possible here, you know, theoretically, the share prices of the companies that explore, find, you know, develop and produce these metals should go up substantially even more, right? Because their leverage plays on the metal prices themselves. I guess first, as you have this sanguine outlook for gold and silver, I assume you probably have a pretty sanguine outlook for the precious metals mining sector in general.
Yeah, because mining stocks are based, they're perpetual options on directionally in the price of the underlying metal, gold or silver. So if it costs all in, I think the number today is around, let's say $1,200, maybe $1,300 an ounce to produce gold, and the margin is $600 on that, or $1,900 where we are today. And then the gold price goes up by, let's call it 20% to, it's roughly $2,400. Well, that's almost a doubling of the margins of producing. And so in the early stages of a upward leg in the metal price, I would expect to see 2 to 3 times that in terms of the leverage, in terms of the returns in the mining stocks themselves.
All right, fascinating. Well, look, John, I'm looking at the time, and rather than try to do an important subject short shrift, I'd love to have you back on the program at some point in time to talk specifically about the mining companies, both in terms of where you see the best opportunities, whether it's majors and miners, whether it's explorers or developers or producers. But more importantly, as I said in the introduction, you know, you've really been one of the most successful portfolio managers in the precious metals mining space around. And I'd love it if you'd feel comfortable sort of sharing your framework with us in terms of how you evaluate a company. Right, when you're looking at a mining company, how do you determine whether its prospects are good enough to put into your portfolio or not? Because I know in this space, you know, there's a lot of chaff along with the wheat.
That is putting it mildly. I'd love to come back if you'll have me, and love to spend more time on that theme.
Well, all right, John, look, in beginning to wrap things up here, I want to go back to what you talked about at the beginning of the program, which was your forecast that more pain lies ahead, right? Continued slowing the economy, perhaps going into a steeper and longer recession. And then on the market side, the bear market not being over, which means that there's a lower bottom lying ahead out there, right? So looks like it has a high potential to be another challenging year for investors. You know, then you made a really important thesis through this entire interview about the wisdom of owning precious metals in this type of environment. And, you know, for the average person who's got a job in a real life, it's very hard to navigate all this on their own, which is why at Wealthion, you know, we recommend that people partner with a professional financial advisor who understands all the macro issues that you laid out here, John, but who also understands the value of precious metals. And, you know, most financial advisors will try to talk people out of investing in precious metals because they don't make any money directly off of that, right? Most people, you know, if you're buying physical ounces, you buy them directly from some sort of dealer, and it's not held in your portfolio, so the financial advisor can't charge a fee. So, you know, as we recommend to folks strongly on this channel, find a professional financial advisor who understands all the macro issues that John and I have talked about here, but who also appreciates the role that precious metals can play in your portfolio. And then they can help design a strategy for you that will fit the type of environment that John, you know, very eloquently laid out for us here that he thinks is coming. If you have a good financial advisor who already does that for you, great, stick with them. But if you don't, or you'd like a second opinion from one who does, consider talking to one of the financial advisors endorsed by Wealthion. They offer free consultations, totally free, don't cost you anything. There's no commitment to work with these guys. It's just a public service that they offer investors to just try to help as many people as possible make prudent decisions today in advance of all the things that John said lay ahead. And if you'd like to see John return to this program, like he just said he would very kindly be willing to do, please do us a favor. Support this channel by hitting the like button, then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. John, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been wonderful to have you on here and to do this debut interview for the Gold Silver audience. Gold Silver folks, I hope you've enjoyed getting the first access to John's insights here. And John, like I said, I really hope we can have you on the program again in the future.
Thanks, Adam. Real pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much, John. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.